I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was blowing sad when Bobby sang the blues. With those windshield wipers slapping time and Bobby clapping hands, we finally sang up every song that Bobby knew. That driver knew. Yeah, my name is Howard and I'm an alcoholic. This is a longer story than would. Well, anyway, I told you last night that when I was in the service, I was an electrician. Now, I didn't tell you that I wanted to be an electrician when I got out of the service, and for a number of reasons, I couldn't do it. And I had a chance to be a tool maker, so I got that job. And Pat and I were already married, and then I saw her naked, and then we had we got pregnant. But until we got married, she wasn't exposed. And but now it's pressure, you know. And I got this job, and it's a toolmaker. My dad always said, get a job that's a skilled trade. Don't be a ditch digger, you know. And from when I first heard that, when I was two, I was, you know, I was always working to not be a ditch digger. And now I was a tool maker. And it wasn't a good one, but it's the highest paid. It's the skilled trade in the manufacturing industry. So I want this. I'm going to mount to something. Well, I knew I was going to get laid off. I was in San Diego and they're digging out the harbor for SeaWorld, and anybody with an eye and elbow knows we're going to be a tourist place, and we're not going to be an industry. And I need to move to Los Angeles, but no, I don't get to do that. But I gave up being a toolmaker, and on Friday, and it was a bad, bad weekend. But Monday, I got a job as an entry-level engineer. I had no idea how in the hell I got this job, other than I interview well. And I've got this, and it turns out I'm good at it. And then it turns out I'm not good at anything, and then I come to AA. Now, 13 years later, I'm sober in AA. And I get promoted to manager, technical section, systems engineering department, helicopter design division on the Apache helicopter, manager of a technic, that's my career goal, and I get that. Now, I'm also, this is when I'm going through the steps again, and when I get to step four. Now, it's a different step if you put God in it than if you don't have God in it. And if you do it with God not in it, what you see is you were afraid because self-reliance fails you. That's what causes the fear. Self-reliance fails you. You're unable to do what you want to do because you lack the power, and you know it, so you're afraid. And I go through my fears. And 95% of the stuff I was most afraid of, from when in the first grade I was going to fail, up to that day, didn't happen. Never happened. But I was afraid the worst. I always looked out for the worst potential consequences, which really had the least probability of occurrence, but I handed it the highest percentage. You know, this is the most, I took the worst thing, said this is the most likely to occur, and why am I afraid? So I now have God in my life just as a hypothesis. And if you look at the book, it says we ask ourselves, why were we afraid? Self-reliance fails us. Self-reliance is good. And I will add, self-reliance is essential. You've got to do your part in this universe. But what we really need is to connect with God and rely on an infinite God rather than the finite self. Well, now let's look at my life. How in the hell did I get to be the manager of a technical section? And I don't have that great an education, but I'm good at it. Now, what I wanted was to be an electrician. If I would have got my way, I would not have been a good electrician. But what I learned in the Navy, as an electrician's mate, is that weapon systems on the battlefield are maintained by 17-year-old kids with a high school education and not a hell of a lot of other training. And they maintain that equipment on the battlefield because it's designed for a 17-year-old to maintain it. Government spends a lot of money for that to happen. And I learned, in the way removals, I learned all kinds of design errors. Then as a tool maker, I didn't make one good tool, but I learned manufacturing processes. I learned engineering tolerances. I learned engineering drawings. I learned how things are made in order to turn the product design into hardware. I really got good at that and understood it. As an entry-level engineer, that's stuff you need to know. And as a section manager, that's stuff you need to know. All that stuff is stuff that if I would have... And so when I look at my life, what we see is a corrosive thread of fear pulled through the fabric of my entire being. But when we look at it from the point of view of what my life really was like, I learned everything I needed to learn. My life was over as an electrician. I had everything I needed from that. But that wasn't what I wanted, so I didn't see that. And then I was going to be a toolmaker. I didn't get what I wanted, so I was not happy and didn't see that. But 13 years into sobriety, I can look back and say, my God, in every part, God was pulling a golden thread through every circumstance and event of my life to bring me to the good place that I'm at today. That was transforming. Because when I was new, Archie Johnson, who was acting in the Sting movie. And he and I were friends, and he said, boy, they rave residuals. And I'm in a movie with Redford and Newman. He said, there's going to be residuals for that forever. Now, he's speaking at Palisades, and he says, I was so busy this week wanting what I was getting that I didn't have time to worry about getting what I wanted. And in AA, we learn to live in the now, right now. And whatever's happening right now, love that. Because that's what's going to happen anyway. And the problems you're going to have is not, the biggest problem you're going to have is not liking what you're getting now. But that's what's going to get anyway, okay? Now, if you go back to your life with 13 years sobriety, looking at the fears and seeing that while in just from a selfish point of view, I wasn't having my way and things are stressful now. If I can see, based on my life, as I have written it out myself, it is not a fantasy, it is my life. And everything in it was building in a constructive way to a great life. Because it wasn't just me. I was doing the self-reliance stuff, but God was pulling a golden thread through all this stuff, and I think guiding me to do what I was doing. I wasn't listening, not out loud, but You know, that's transforming. And later on in life, very quickly on in life, when stuff happens, and stuff is going to happen, that's the law. When stuff happens, remember, this was what happened when I didn't get to be an electrician. You know, this is some greater goodness that is happening, which can only happen in this mystical way. And for me to know that, it isn't what I want. That's not the answer. I got to want what I'm getting, knowing that this is unfolding into goodness. And I base that on my personal assessment of my life in inventory. But not the same stuff every time, but it goes deeper as we get more experience.
Questions? Yeah. Well, Bill recommends that we get books recommended to us, you know, for our spiritual development in the 11th step. I mean, there's just no conflict at all. In meetings, I think there's a pretty broad belief that primarily in meetings we should use, you know, approved literature. And by and large, we do. There are groups that have other books in the back. Most of our intergroups have other books. You know, the 24-hour book and some of Hazelton's sort of thing. I mean, if you restrict, and that's what I think. I think some of us think we're disloyal or not doing it correctly if we expand outside. I mean, it is specifically what we need for a spiritual walk is not all contained in the first 164 pages of our book. You know, and I'm going to, tomorrow when we start, you know, kind of winding it up and talking more about that, there's a whole series of different authors that will enhance. And for many of us, again, I said, I bring that back into my cave and I recapitulate it. I don't talk about at meetings, you know, I might bring one quote or an idea I heard someone say once, but I don't tell them what book it is or whatever. You know, I mean, new people should not be distracted. They should get familiar with the, you know, the fundamental and basics of what's going on. But there's just a boatload of us that need to broaden our spiritual walk and our spiritual search. I mean, it's we're stagnant. And I think the other thing that happens when you read things that speak to your heart, you start to realize how good our literature is. I mean, you go, oh, yeah. I mean, that's what, yeah. It's you recognize the fundamental principles in the big book. But Bob and Bill, I mean, I went through Bob's library with Sue before Sue died. And he had just, you know, and I've got a quote from Bill that I'll read about that tomorrow. But he was a very broad reader, stuff from the Theosophony Society and, you know, Confucius. And, I mean, you know, I had a book that Bill sent Bob, you know, at Christmas, like in 1937, and it was Jung in Modern Man in Search of His Soul saying, hey, Smitty, read this, great stuff, you know. I mean, you know, I think if we, yeah, at any rate, that's, we should be open to direction.
The big, as you said, the big book says there are many helpful books also. And AA has a set of approved literature, but it has no disapproved literature. There is no list of disapproved literature in AA. Everything is open for investigation. to get new, to come up with something new and try it. And if it don't work, you know, tear that page out. But or read it again and try it later. But that's an important part of the program, is this other literature. But as Bob says, when we're first starting, we need to go to 90 meetings in 90 days and listen and all of that
stuff. I wouldn't be handing out books to new guys that I'm sponsoring. You know, I would be wanting them to familiarize.
What?
I wouldn't be handing out, you know, spiritual literature to, you know, new guys that I'm working with. Anybody else?
Yes.
My name is Joe Allman. Hi,
Joe.
I had a question. This is a personal on addiction and with others with their addiction. But I'm curious, do I see, and I've done myself, of giving up my alcoholism, my addiction to alcohol, and finding other addictions, whether even if it's smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee, but I've also seen the program. Start using steroids and working themselves crazy out. But then again, I also see people that find an addiction and working out in a healthy way. So I guess my question is how do we find a good balance of good addictions and bad addictions, whether it be gambling, sure, or sex, or pornography, or whatever.
Get a list of them. Of the good addictions. Well, balance, we're not famous for balance. I don't give a shit if you're, you know, we're a flawed, erratic group of, you know, narcissistic, neurotic, you know, intense thinkers going through life 60 miles an hour head first with no helmet. I mean, that group is a problematic group when you do that. But what happens to an awful lot of us and a lot of people is that compulsive, obsessive pattern goes underground, goes out and sprouts runners. And for me, it was gambling was the primary one. And I had that issue for 7 years.
Is that the big book?
The Howard does a very interesting thing. Howard, in his inventory, uses the sex inventory to inventory any other addictive-like behavior, food, gambling, smoking, pornography. You know, he encourages the people that he goes through his step guide with to include those in the sex inventory. But we are people who have a groove in our psyche almost to overdoing certain things. And we have to watch that. And from my experience with gambling, is my internal experience with gambling, the lying, the covering up, the secretness, the 7, 8, 10, 12 hour runs doing that, the internal experience of that was so close to what my experience was of drinking. I mean, it was just, you know, it was transfer. And it became very clear to me that I had to stop doing that. And as you get more grounded in the program, you can't hide from yourself. It used to be, if I didn't get caught, did it really happen? You know. Eventually, you start catching yourself, and you start to realize this isn't okay. And it's, if you stay active and stay in the path, it has the opportunity to be self-correcting through the work.
In the back of the big book, under spiritual experience, the language that Bill uses, which he said was not his intention to give us the impression that this was always a quick fix. Okay, it wasn't. But his definition is of our experience is an overwhelming consciousness, a change in consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Okay? Now, if you don't identify that as a spiritual experience that you've had, think of when you had your first drink. And what was your experience? It was an immediate change of consciousness followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. You see, what we're looking for, okay, we're spring-loaded to fight or flight, and our pleasure center's dampened. And we find short-term pleasures that change that. Alcohol was the number one offender, but there are many others too. And when we stop alcohol, there's a period of time when we never, you know, we run below a 3 until we can work our way up. But, and we get caught up in pornography and that, you know, sex, I'm telling you, if you're looking for a short-term sex, you can get further behind in sex and get caught up quicker than anything else going. I mean, it is fast, but is it good, you know? But it's short-term pleasure that does not address the long-term problem. And the long-term problem is selfishness and self-centeredness. I must have my way in order to feel good. That's the root of the problem. Alcohol is but a symptom of that. All of these other short-term pleasures are but a symptom of that. The balance is this something that's going to address the long-term problem? Or is it just going to be a quick fix where I go back down? If that's it, cut that out just like you do alcohol. See that you have to surrender to let that go. That's got you and you're never going to get there as long as that's got you. And that enables a surrender. That's the reason I say we put it in the inventory, is because you look at that stuff and that gives you an opportunity to see yourself in a way that will keep you from getting long-term sense of well-being based on what Chuck C. described. He said, there is a living problem. If you've listened to me, he starts at the second chapter. If you paid attention, what you see is you have a living problem. But it has a living answer. Every problem that you have has an answer. But, he said, no one, either alcoholic or non-alcoholic alike, can experience a living answer without a personally satisfactory, okay? Personally satisfactory, that means want that if that's what you're getting, okay? I'm satisfied with that. Personally satisfactory, conscious partnership with the God that made you in this entire business of living. That, he says, is how we can find the living answer. And without that, we cannot find the living answer. Short-term pleasures, you know, that's, you know, you got the Dodgers. Do you live here or in Arizona? Okay, well, we're stuck with the goddamn Diamondbacks, but... But there's a lot of short-term pleasures that don't ruin your life. There's a lot of entertainment and stuff to do. Okay, that's...
I'm like an alcoholic. I think this is probably... I'm going to try and get this to a question quickly enough. You know, I've got about 3.5 years of sobriety and, you know, 4 in not so bad.
No, it's, you know, you're like,
what was the question?
None of your business. The question is I had a strong sense of my relationship with a higher power when my first year or two. Now I'm 3.5 years sober. When things are going pretty well, I don't feel very connected. I don't feel real bad, but I don't feel very connected. Yeah, I think when we're on a roll, a lot of us, you know, just zone out. I mean, it's just amazing how many of us wake up and realize that we haven't prayed or meditated for some significant period of time or whatever, you know, that is. that's the nature of it. And that's why we need to practice. If you expect, you know, when you don't have a practice to maintain, you know, when the book says we're granted a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of our spiritual condition, if we don't maintain our spiritual condition, I mean, the first time someone throws a 95-mile-an-hour fastball at you, you know, you're not going to hit it. And that may not be important in some realms, but if it's involving one of the primary areas of your life, it'd be nice if you were in practice. And it's a... But overall, most of us go through a period like that and we have to come again to reconnect to the idea of powerlessness and surrender. And I think the younger you are, the tougher that is. I think the world is telling you that you just need to be smarter, faster, better. You know, you just need the right stuff. You just, you know, I mean, the whole message of the world is that there's an outside answer. And for those of us that have, you know, us old guys who have been out there, you know, looking at it, there's no outside answer. There's nothing on the outside that has any permanent value. The connection to the meaning of your life, which is what will source you, which is really going to end up being the strength of your life, is interior. And most of us take almost no time for our interior life. Someone else had a hand up in the back over there. Yep.
Tony, alcoholic. Tony. Going back to something you just mentioned previously about sex, one thing that one realization I've had for myself is that my issues with sex, what the big book calls the imperious urge, what it's doing is it's putting a mirror up in front of me and showing me the difference. Who I want you to think I am, or who I want a woman to think I am, or that sort of thing. And it's creating a tremendous amount of frustration and confusion. Sex is a pretty powerful urge, you know, and if you're struggling internally, you're struggling spiritually with it, you know, it's hard to find that serenity and, you know, being happy in your own skin when you're struggling with that kind of stuff. I think Bill Wilson struggled with some of this too.
Yeah, I think the problem with when we talk about sex is we don't put it in context. I mean, sex has more meaning and you're able to make better decisions in the context of a relationship. Sex in the absence, you know, I mean, if it's, you know, sex with myself or whatever the sort of is, you know, over a period of time, if we have an excessive relationship with say, pornography, it will impede healthy sexual relationships in your life. And that's the problem with it. I mean, it's the largest problem with it. It just changes the way, you know, the more you see these perfect bodies and the, you know, you start to get an unrealistic attitude. And the more you put sex without the person, you know, I mean, it has an intended role. Most of us, when Bill talks about, we take things to an unintended end, you know, with unintended consequences. That's the problem with all that stuff. I mean, it's attractive. I mean, we're wired that way. We're, you know, thank God we are that way. But it's when it's out of balance, it has consequences. It doesn't produce anything positive in our lives. And, I mean, that's the end of it. When you have a, you know. And a lot of us at different periods of time, we had to go back and recapitulate, reconstruct a more healthy foundation at home. You know, I mean, when I went back and started dating my wife, I mean, we, you know, I didn't want to do that. I had her love and affection. It was everybody else's I wanted. But every Friday night, we got dressed up. We went out in a real live dangerous date. It turned out to be, you know, usually one of our romantic nights. We went out to dinner. We didn't go to a movie. And I had a, you know, we started to go to Chicago and check up for the weekend or New York or whatever. You know, we started to do things that I would do if I had a girlfriend. You know, and we reestablished romance. You know, we were out talking about bills and kids, you know, which is not how we fell in love. You know, so we had to put, you know, elements, you know, build a structure that was supportive to balance. And then I we found, you know, for us, sex came very naturally. We didn't have any issues with that.
I want to just add to that. Whatever, it's like on a computer. When you first get a computer, a new computer, you type in Bank of America. Or better than that, Southwest Airlines. And then if you want, you know, pretty soon you've typed all these things in. The one you use the most will come up first. Now, Southwest Optical Company, Southwest in Arizona, all kinds of Southwest, they all come, but the one you use the most will come up first. Your brain works that way. The one you use, the thought process, the action you use the most. If it's anger, what your brain does is the thing you use the most, it'll take brain cells from neighboring circuits that aren't being used and add them to the thing you're doing the most. So it becomes easier and easier to be angry, easier and easier to be afraid. And if you're going to practice forgiveness, you need to practice forgiveness. You need to practice it. Forgive, forgive, forgive. And if you fire it, you wire it. And if you don't use it, you lose it. And so it isn't just a matter of knowing. It's a matter of doing. Pat's eye went off like Jack Elam's. It was, you know, God damn. But she got a physical therapist that worked with her until her eye, you know, the brain cells that had been destroyed. They had been destroyed that kept her eyes in line. And new brain cells were taught, you know, she just created new circuits with physical therapy. That's an amazing thing. And we do that with our brains in working the steps and doing the program.
Yep.
Bless the alcoholic. Using the example of re-engaging the relationship with your wife, date night, firing up new cells to have a new relationship within Pat's brain and her eye. How would you do that with your image of yourself in Alcoholics Anonymous and in your business life in regard to God? Is that a flesh it all out and start from the beginning again, or is it a just a new...
It's a little bit of a bullshit premise. The question is, how would you deal with your relationship with yourself and your relationship with your image in AA and business? Just be yourself. I mean, this idea that I have a relationship with myself, this idea that I have a relationship with my image, I mean, it's fractured. I mean, that isn't how life is. It's just, you know, you are yourself. You don't have a relationship. Eckhart Tolle is a guy that you should, you know, read, and he talks a little bit about that. But I mean, that's the language of today. My relationship with myself, as opposed to just being yourself and being in life. About my image. I mean, who, you know, there are different, and I have, you know, some image issues. But after a period of time, I think it's an illusion. your image of yourself is an illusion. You know, you just be yourself, and you really, you start to bring, you know, it's like restoring your integrity, your wholeness, and you stop bifurcating yourself, and you start, my image of myself, I mean, it's just bring it back home and take a look at what you're doing. If you're, what you're doing and how you're being is okay, it's okay. And if it's not okay, it's not okay. Change something. But, you know, to project, you know, like a hologram, your image, and then to take a picture of it and ask what I'm supposed to do with that image and how I'm supposed to adjust it, eventually you just have to be yourself and stop that double layering, which is an illusion.
Chuck had a fixture business. Chuck Chamberlain. He made fixtures for grocery stores. And he did it with the idea, when he started out, of being of service. And he lived his whole life in service. But he needed money. And he had he had been the vice president of sales, so he knew who bought from the company. And he went out to bring in the business after, I think he owned it. And one after the other turned him down. He was going out for money. And one after the other turned him down. And this last one was made up of AA people. He knew he had that one. And they said, Chuck, we love you, but we don't think you're going to be able to keep this business. And we don't want to buy from somebody that's going to go broke. Well, he had to stop and cry on the way home. Could not see through the tears to drive. And he, you know, the thought came to him, what the hell was you doing when you were enjoying life? He was helping people with service because he wanted to. And he went back to the office and a couple good things happened, but he filled the place up with business by going back out. So he surrendered that what he was doing now was, and it is, that's how we change ourselves. That's how we change, that's how we get changed, is with surrender. In step 7 of the 12 and 12, it tells us that. With the surrender we get from alcoholism, we're able to not drink 100%. But that doesn't work in any of the other defects of character, because no other defect of character kicks your ass the way alcohol and drugs do. So you really get beaten there. But all the rest of them are just making life tough. So your level of surrender is a perfect ideal, but it's not perfect.
I have a question about our schedule. So we're going to go to lunch.